Thank you, dear listener, for tuning into Panopticon, a podcast which explores various elements of the occult, culture, and consciousness. And now your host, Andy.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Panopticon Podcast. Tonight on episode 12, we are going to be speaking with Jonathan Talat Phillips. Jonathan, how are you this evening?
I'm good. How you doing, Andy? Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Fantastic. So why don't you tell us about yourself and your background before we get into bioenergetics and America's psychopathy.
Okay. I'm an energy healer. I became one when I started seeing energy fields, which I hope to talk about. That was something I never expected to do. I used to be a media activist. Coming out of that process, I then helped co-found Reality Sandwich, a web magazine for transformational culture. We now have an international community of about 125,000 people. We've created a social network, Evolver.net, for conscious collaboration, and I also coordinate 40 Evolver regional groups that get together each month to really reinvent how we see our lives and live as a community. So we come together to share resources, talents, gifts, all of these things to get off the competitive hierarchical model that you see that creates such scarcity and suffering in the world. And we're trying to really create a scaffolding for a new planetary culture, if you will. And I'm a Reiki master, do bioenergetic therapy, and I have a private practice in New York City.
Okay, fantastic. Now, would you like to talk a little bit about your path, what led you into doing this work?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good entry point. I'd first like to say, Andy, that I never, if several years ago would tell me I was going to talk about the things we're about to talk about, I would have laughed and thought that was impossible.
Okay.
Because I was a strict materialist. I was a media activist who, I did everything I could to try to get George W. Bush not reelected.
Yeah.
We actually led this American revolution, if you will, against King George and his corporate tyranny, as we're calling it. So we dressed up as like flashy patriots, like Bootsy Collins meets Benjamin Franklin patriots, these amazing media stunts. We did a Paula Revere's ride on Horsicle, half bike, half horse, warning Manhattan, the Republicans are coming. We did all these stunts. And we got all sorts of attention. I was on the cover of New York Magazine. We were in Time, CNN, NBC, all these things. And like the 500,000 people that participated in the largest protest ever against the political convention, I thought politics alone could save our planet in crisis.
Yeah.
And when Bush won that second election, some might say took it, I went through a real dark night of the soul. And I didn't get out of bed, and I was just looking at the planetary situation, how all our rivers are polluted. I think it's like 96% on the planet. 85% of the big fish in our oceans were totally fished out. Multinational corporations taking over everything. And we're in what's called the sixth great extinction right now, where there's mass species extinction with three species dying every hour. So by the end of this podcast, it's very likely two or three species will no longer be on the planet.
Oh, Jesus.
And looking on all of this, it just seemed so great that I thought this couldn't, that politics alone could not help solve our massive planetary issues. And so what I started thinking is maybe what we needed was some type of paradigm shift, almost like a Galileo-type paradigm shift. So when you say, you know, suddenly realize that the whole universe doesn't revolve around us, that just changes the way you look at every particle in your reality.
Yeah.
So I was looking for a paradigm shift, but I'm not some visionary scientist or philosopher and didn't know where to look. Of course, I looked on the internet mostly, and I didn't find anything. And after months and months of searching, I gave up. But as the Chinese curse goes, may you get what you wish for, on my 30th birthday, I went to this party. The girl I was seeing at the time, she's like, you've been talking about politics and paradigm shift for months. You need to chill out and relax. So take some MDMA, get onto the dance floor, and have some fun.
Good medicine.
And when I did that, you know, this is an age-old way of getting knowledge, of finding mystical experiences. Cultures across the planet, and tribal cultures have been doing this forever. take a mind-altering substance and dance together in community. And so what happened that night is a series of synchronicities laid themselves out upon me. I would just think of things and they would happen. And then when I got home, I was just sitting in my bed thinking about maybe the universe is a little different than I thought. Why did all these coincidences happen all in the same night? And then I felt a presence come to me, who I now understand is my spirit guides, which that's a long process to explain. And once this presence came, poof, the lights turned on. And suddenly my entire reality was different. Because what was my normal bedroom suddenly had electric fields all around it. Whether it was the furniture, myself, my girlfriend at the time. And suddenly I was seeing reality in an entirely different way. The process that happened then, Andy, is I thought it was crazy. So I was going, walking around the East Village, seeing energy fields around everything. I now know people call them auras. I thought it was totally crazy until, to my surprise, I found Jesus, or Jesus found me. And, you know, this is usually where you get a groan from an audience because, you know, we've heard that line a lot. But
right.
For me, what it was is, I saw this poster of Jesus on some construction site asking people to go to church, and around his head was the same auric field, the energy fields that I was seeing. And it hit me, that painting, as I saw it, the poster, I wasn't crazy, that mystical traditions across the planet had been messaging this for centuries for people like me that had been having experiences like that. So then my journey actually went into studying the mystery schools of Christianity, if I could just discuss that for a minute.
Yeah, please.
And I learned I was totally wrong about my ideas of Christianity, because when you do just even a little bit of research into it, you find out it's very different than what they taught you at Sunday school. The mystery schools most likely come out of Egypt. They're very deep, go back throughout centuries. And they all have similar traits. They all have a dying, resurrecting God-man who has 12 disciples. He goes out on the age of 30. And it's throughout. It's Horus, Attis, Mithras. All these different characters have the same traits. And they all have the same, same rituals throughout.
Yeah.
There's an anointing. There's a baptism. There's a Eucharist. And then there's the death and resurrection. And it's thought, and I think the evidence is absolutely compelling for this, that all the mystery schools, these stories, Jesus' story, is telling our own story of the path of the initiate. They're going to go through these steps on their way to self-awareness.
Right.
The highest initiates were called pneumatics, and the word pneuma is spiritual energy or breath. The study of the Holy Spirit is called pneumatology, and there's all these scenes where Jesus delivers the transmission of the Holy Spirit for it to his disciples to have heightened states of consciousness.
Yeah, it's been posited by such films, you know, like Zeitgeist and such, that this whole process was basically a symbolic representation of the Earth's relationship to the sun and our movement throughout the sky and throughout the houses of the zodiac. But I also kind of feel like it's oftentimes left out that, as you said, this mythological process that we see all throughout the ancient world is actually more so a kind of a symbolic representation of, like, the path of the hero or the path of the initiate, as you said.
As above, so below. So,
right.
Yes, it's about the zodiac, it's about the cosmology, and it's about our inner cosmology. Andy, I'm so glad you mentioned that. I actually had this conversation about 3 days ago that I love Zeitgeist, and it does such a great job of showing a lot of these, what was being represented, but it doesn't show the mystical path. And for me, that's just such a key element of what was going on there. It's not just about looking up at the skies, it's about looking inward. There's a great Gospel of Thomas line. For those that know it, there were all these other scriptures, or who don't, there were all these other scriptures that were wiped out during the Council of Nicaea in, I don't remember the date right now, around 350 or so AD.
Yeah.
And they had, a lot of it was about gnosis, direct or revelation of the divine. And there's this great Gospel of Thomas line where Jesus says, heaven is spread across the earth, only man doesn't see it.
Hmm.
And so I think think it's like if by shifting our consciousness, we can see heaven upon earth and help bring it to the earth as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like if you were to combine the findings in Zeitgeist with, say, like Hero with a Thousand Faces by Joseph Campbell, which explains more so the inner process we go through, as explained by myth, that's basically all you need right there is those two works.
I'm actually writing a book called The Electric Jesus that covers this. But if there are people on this call that are interested in the Jesus Mystery School, there's a wonderful book by Timothy Freak. It's spelled F-R-E-K-E, and Peter Gandy called The Jesus Mysteries, that goes into this in depth. It's just such a beautiful book.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. I'll have to check those out. So you basically, you have these transcendental experiences, these entheogenic experiences, I guess, and so you kind of found within Gnostic Christianity a way to kind of ground these experiences you were having and kind of give shape or form to them?
Yeah. Because for me, that was my tradition growing up. It was Christianity. So the stories of that really helped me ground a lot of what I was processing. But the problem is the mystery schools had been killed off. So I couldn't go through a Gnostic process. I did start the New York Gnostics, but I didn't have the experience that an initiate that had gone through the process did. So I actually went to energy healing school, became a Reiki master, did yoga. Now I'm a Sufi initiate as well. And when I came out of this training, you know, I was still a media activist, I realized. But my vision had changed. Instead of protesting against, I really just wanted to start working on building a new world.
Yeah.
What was great is things have changed since I had started activism. Over that time period, which, you know, it's probably 2 or 3 years, suddenly YouTube was available. So where I was doing media stunts, and you'd have the media take all these great ideas and really flatten them or give them a cynical take, now you could just do your own media and suddenly have 10 million views.
Right.
And then the mainstream would then have to pay attention to it from there. And so suddenly, like, web blogs were so popular and easy to do with Drupal open source platform that with very little money, you could now create your own media hub. And that's what we wanted to do for transformational culture with Reality Sandwich. There was just, as far as I could see, no place where all those who are looking at the forefront of transformation, whether it's shamanism, digital technologies, permaculture, all these different ways of doing it and re-envisioning community in our lives. So we created this space called Reality Sandwich, which was a web magazine for our voices to come together. And over the last couple of years, we've had over 350 contributors, and it's just been amazing to see this blossom. And so that we can share our own stories together without having some corporate monolith kind of suck it dry and commodify it.
Right. No, it's one of the best sites on the net. It's one of the few sites over the past few years that I go to several times a week. Couldn't put that over enough, that site. Would this be a good time to get into bioenergetics and all these really fascinating ideas about the kind of like the psyche of America, the cultural psyche that we are in right now?
I'd love that, because we've laid the groundwork of the energy and the media stuff, so yeah.
Yeah. So I first ran across your diagnosis.
Treating America's psychopathy.
Yeah. Could you talk about that and how that ties in with bioenergetics and the different structures that they... I guess basically explain bioenergetics, like a little 101 on that, and then we can get into American culture.
Yeah, the idea with bioenergetics is each of us growing up, we accumulate defense structures, energetic defense structures that get crystallized into our body. They kind of solidify through traumatic or potentially traumatic or difficult experiences growing up at a young age. And what happens is often you need those defenses. They help you get by, but we don't let them go. And so what we end up doing is seeing the world kind of through the eyes of a traumatized child versus in senses. The whole energetic experience we have is still repeating those traumas in a way.
Right.
Because we haven't let them go. And bioenergetics, and these are kind of labels, but they really help you work with clients, is they come in with different defense structures. And in bioenergetics, what they say is we all have all five of these. So, and there's no judgment on which one's better or worse, although sometimes people like to, you know, do that. But we all have them, and we have primaries and secondaries and tertiary, and they have different names. And none of them sound too great, really, I think. It's like the psychopath, the masochist, oral, schizoid, and rigid. And they have a positive name form, too. Like, the psychopath is actually called the challenger or the defender. And so what I do with clients when they come in, they actually often come in their defense structures. So you'll see them right away, and you're able to work with them to help release those, connect with trapped, blocked energies, release them, and come to more self-empowerment and safety, all of these kind of things. But working with clients, it suddenly hit me that organizations and larger structures also have these defense structures. And I've always, of course, as kind of a media guy and activist, I was very interested in what America's defense structure was.
Yeah.
And feeling into it, it didn't take very long to recognize that America was quite likely a psychopathic defense structure. And it seemed to me like we had all the qualities of it. Psychopaths, they don't have, if you look at their body, that's one of the first things you'll probably do when you look at a client, biogenetics speaking, is you're looking at their body type and posture. And with a psychopath, they'll have very strong, like, upper body, chest, arms, but the legs are very weak. They're not very grounded. To me, that seemed to be a lot like America. We have all these armaments for protection, you know. Look at our nuclear arsenal, look at our army, but as far as grounding goes, we don't put a lot into like environmental causes or really connecting people with nature and the earth vibrations.
Right.
Psychopaths have major betrayal issues because often they were brought up with a parent that kind of said you're great and then pushed you away. Maybe there was even a little bit of sexual attraction between the parents.
Right.
And so they don't feel like unless they have to be right or perfect to be loved. And I was actually looking at America and its relationship with England and breaking off from Mother England is a thing that may have triggered a psychopathic defense in their country.
Right.
They often have piercing, untrusting eyes. They don't trust. And I just was looking at, like, our surveillance systems and domestic spying,
yeah.
CIA operations. All of these things seem to indicate a psychopathic defense.
And this manifests as wars and, you know, basically legalizing torture and a culture of fear.
Culture of fear, yeah. The psychopath's always kind of believes themselves to be under attack. They have a hard time being friends with everyone else. They bully, you know, America, we've been bullying. We have manifest destiny, you know, we've decimated Native Americans, our foreign invasions, all of these things are fighting an enemy that's actually within us internally that actually needs a lot of love.
And so if America was a client that a therapist was trying to treat, what would that therapist go about doing?
Well, I have to say, as a bioenergetic healer, for me the psychopath is one of the most challenging. Because trust and betrayal is always an issue. They don't like to feel threatened. So safety is key to them. I mean, I guess I'd like to help say psychopaths like to be right. They want to be right all the time. And it's not, I mean, you see that all the time with America. God's gun and country, USA number one.
Right.
And what we're really trying to do is ground them, help them feel safe, let down their guards, so that they can connect with a larger community. And I really see that's what I feel we need to do as a culture is work on America to feel part of the world, not that it's controlling the world, because that's actually a really unsafe place to be. I think there's ways to do it. It's a little tricky because right now we don't have the consciousness around this country to make it happen. But one is to really ground ourselves, to start connecting with nature. Right now we work too hard, we're too busy, we're always competing against one another. But if we could ground ourselves, if we could reconnect with our tribal elders, the Native Americans that were here beforehand, other people like that are still holding these earth vibrations and ceremony. If you can get people in the ceremony, it really can take them into harmony with others. Another other thing I think is we just need to redo the entire education structure of this country. It's a competitive-based structure, which is totally psychopathic defense. When I was teaching in Czech Republic, I was telling them things about popularity contests, and they just didn't understand it because they don't have these competitive models like we do. They didn't have them.
That was in Prague.
That was in Prague. And for me, that told me how much I was locked into my defense system because I couldn't imagine a school culture without a popularity contest.
Right. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
I mean, I think education's a big one. Sorry, what was that, Andy?
Oh, I just said I thought that was really interesting reading in your... I felt the same way. I just read A Nation of Masochists recently, your other article. And, I found it almost impossible to conceive of a school situation where kids were getting bullied or there weren't like a clique hierarchy and all of that. Because it's so integral to the schools that we, I'm assuming you did, you know, as well as I grew up in.
I know. It's like once I started having these experiences with energy and healing, something I realized is I just lost faith in every system I'd been brought up in. Because I realized they were working in a certain level of consciousness. I actually think it's a very third chakra level of consciousness. And the third chakra, to me, seems like where America and most of Western civilization is at right now. It's ambition-driven, it's masculine, it's achievement, but it doesn't integrate. It doesn't honor the sacred feminine. It often is very materialistic. It doesn't even see that there's the potential for a spiritual world. And I was in that mentality because I didn't believe there was any spiritual world or energetic world. But if we move up into the heart center, and that's kind of the trick with the psychopath is you're trying to connect them with the heart to ground them, then all sorts of miracles happen. And it's actually the beauty of the third chakra, too. It's like it's destructive fire alchemy, and it's pushing us and propelling us, I believe, into a new level of consciousness. It would almost be like a whole different vibrational reality or like water level that we're now floating in. And the only way an easy way to explain this is, I think back in not too long ago, there was, it was a dark time in the world. There was only AM, you know, AM radio. And then suddenly there was this new frequency called FM that if you could tune your dial to, you'd get a lot of rock and roll. Yeah. And I think, we can really dial into some cosmic rock and roll if we start opening up to this new level of consciousness.
That's a great analogy. Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like the problem with America vis-a-vis the world right now is that we've buried ourselves so deep in our military infrastructure and so many different countries around the world and wars, and we have so much blood on our hands that we're just making it so much more complicated for ourselves to extricate ourselves from it. Do you know what I mean? You can't just all of a sudden say, okay, I'm done. I'm going to be cool. I'm not going to harm my neighbor. I'm going to be respectful. I'm only going to, live a healthy life and encourage like a healthy life in those around me and be loving. So it's going to take some kind of major transformation, I feel like. Go ahead.
I feel like this transformation is about 10,000 years in the making, and it's an extremely difficult one. A lot of my work, I'll keep going back to, because when I was going through this dark night, I was looking about where do things get, you use the word problem, and in healing we wouldn't necessarily use problem, we could say condition.
Right.
It's something to look at, but often these problems are lessons or things to be learned. And I was looking at where did all the suffering come from? And when I was following back through various empires and everything else, I kept going back and back and back. Sure that I wasn't going to end up anywhere, but I did. And where I ended up was a surprising place for a non-religious person like myself, is I ended at the Garden of Eden, right at the beginning.
Yeah.
And so I started looking at the myth as like code to what may have happened to Western civilization. And to me, it seemed to be right in there. Like, in the beginning, they're living in this hunter-gatherer model of existence. They're connected with nature and each other and living from the abundance of the earth. And then there's this switch into agriculture. There's a switch into separation, a further separation out of nature, And then suddenly you have patriarchy. I mean, the next scene is Cain and Abel, and they're working, one's domestic, working with domesticated animals. The other is toiling with crops in the field. And we all know how that story ends up. We have our first act of psychopathic violence in Western history.
Right.
But we go from this cooperative model to a hierarchical model very soon. I mean, God is actually acting as a kind of like a landlord in that they're having to give him rewards back for the harvest. There's patriarchy, there's competition, there's individualism, and then there's scarcity. All of these things, and there's original sin, which is the most powerful of all of these. Right. No longer are you good at your core. There's something wrong with you. It has to be fixed. You have to do and produce and create actions in order to be loved. God just doesn't love you for who you are. And I looked at this original sin as like a virus almost. It begins in the Fertile Crescent. That's where the story of Adam and Eve happens and then spreads across the planet. And I think it creates external battles and suffering and has created so many wars and violence. And now we have like an exponential version of original sin embedded within our entire cultural operating system, if you will. So, Andy, what you're saying is I'm looking at it, and if all those things you're saying, to me, they come from an old paradigm, but the virus has, like, gone out of control. But sometimes it needs to get that way for you to even be like, oh, wow, I'm sick. I actually need to work on healing.
Right.
I'm hoping that's where we're at, especially with, like, the BP oil spills. Wow, we're sick. We're not sure how to get better. Things we've tried before aren't working. Maybe we need to open up to some new possibilities.
Right. Change isn't going to come. The type of change that I would like to see happen isn't going to come externally. It's only going to occur if we can, to borrow a quote from the 60s, kill the tyrant inside. Right? Like, it's not about the tyrant out there. It's not about George W. Bush or Adolf Hitler so much as it's about the little, as Wilhelm Reich called it, the little man inside, the tyrant inside, the bully, the infant that's just me, 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 now. Like, unless we go inside and kill that, we're not going to see very, very much any kind of fundamental evolution occur anytime soon. So it's all about what goes on in the internal landscape, I believe, and not so much what laws are in effect or who's running the show, politically speaking, and that sort of thing, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes total sense to me. I would maybe invite a other perspective, having dealt with my own internal demons, if you will, and that's, there's this great book called Feeding Your Demons, where this Buddhist, former Buddhist nun, I don't know why they just don't say monk, because she's female, but she has a whole process of you don't kill your demons, you feed them, you nurture them, and then they become your ally. And I think America right now is kind of a demon on the planet, but we're the prodigal son. So if we can figure out a way to actually nurture people in this country, to make them, I don't know how to do this on a mass scale, but on a personal scale, I know when I try to kill my demons, I create separation and division. If I try to nurture and feed them and transmute them, then I have inner harmony.
Yeah, that's almost exactly like the whole Jungian ideal of the shadow, and that you have this part of you that you can't kill it because it's you. And if you kill it, then you just make yourself basically impotent. And so I think it was the alchemists from some alchemical text I derived this, where it said that with the shadow, you don't kill it, you cook it and eat it. kind of basically in line
exactly.
with what you're saying. Yeah.
Andy, I would love to see some massive shadow work in America, American culture. We don't know how to do it right now, but there's all these examples to understand the shadow that keep coming up. Like Ted Haggard, the guy who was the religious right conservative, like,
oh, yeah.
He led the biggest churches, and then it turned out he was this gay, he was closet homosexual, having sex with a prostitute and doing meth.
Right.
And of course, everyone laughed, and there was all sorts of ridicule. But to me, that was a huge lesson on the shadow. Like, we could have, you know, given love to Ted Haggard and also been like, look, this is what happens when we don't integrate things.
Right.
He was like the biggest anti-homosexual out there because he couldn't integrate his shadow.
Right.
I feel like this with Tiger Woods too. Like, you know, that was a huge, we could have learned so much about the shadow if we, media culture that actually understood it and had a consciousness around it. But I mean, we're not there, and I don't know if we will ever get there, but I guess my job as a visionary is to envision ways that we can be.
Yes.
I really think the call we all have right now is to be visionaries and start envisioning a new world. I loved what you said about when you went through this dark space, you've been again opening up to new potentials. Because this is an old Joseph Campbell thing of like, in the darkest place, that's when the life comes in, the new light. It's like Jesus had to go up on the cross to, you know, experience heaven in the way that he did.
Or even more specifically, go down to, as the myth goes, go down to hell for 3 days.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
he didn't want to do it. I love this scene where he's in the garden. And he's like, I don't want to do this, but your will is God's will is more important than his own self.
Right.
And right now, I feel like we are on the cross as a planet. We are in a planetary dark night of the soul. And this is the moment where transformation can occur if we kind of let go of our egoic selves to some degree, and can let that new light in, and new awareness and perspective. Yeah. And often it helps to have guides. I think we're actually getting a lot of help. This may sound strange, but I think across the veil there's a lot of help for us. And as people open up, there'll be more guidance coming in. I mean, I feel like that's the key to healing. It's the first year of energy healing school, students are always talking about fixing. You know, I want to fix this, or I want to cure this, and the teachers will be like, it's not about fixing, it's connecting and releasing, because the whole modality of healing is you're already perfect and powerful, and it's just a process of remembering.
Right.
And that really goes with the old mystery school lines of like, there'd be like the dismemberment, and then the process of enlightenment is a remembering, like putting the pieces back together. So we already are that powerful. We just need to start making that return journey. Sometimes I feel like it's about seeing the perfectly healed person that I already am and bringing in those energies and bringing light, that light. And then sometimes it's like I got to go into the darkness and be like, whoa, this is, I got to connect with this now. For me, it's just been a dance of that, connecting with the dark and also bringing in the light. But the New Age movement, I haven't connected with it in many ways. I actually think they have what we would call a schizoid defense structure. And the schizoids, and that's actually my own primary, so I understand it a little bit, is they're not grounded. They're so off in the ether, they haven't grounded themselves in this reality. And often with New Age people, I'll find there's like a split that happens because they haven't integrated their daily life with the more spiritual stuff. Like, or, you know, maybe it won't be like they can't talk about pop culture or, you know, humor in the same sense. But this is just my own feelings. Or they haven't maybe integrated the shadow, because I've heard in a lot of New Age books that I've read, like, you must integrate the shadow, but it doesn't go into like deep, hard, difficult, murky, tough process that shadow work actually is.
Right.
In that said, if anyone's doing shadow work right now or curious, like there's just dark spaces that you're afraid of, you have anxiety, fear, depression, anger. There's a book I really recommend for people out there, Debbie Ford's Light Chasers, something about light chasers going through the dark or something like that. But if you look up Debbie Ford, she's just an amazing shadow work healer, mentor. So, but I feel like, I would like to say, Andy, I think there's a new culture coming out of this. We use the word evolver in my network that I'm associated with. You know, it doesn't have any new age tints too much. But to me, evolvers, they're just more grounded, they're funny, they're hip, a lot of them. You know, you integrate the technologies more. and I feel like this is the next wave of this planetary culture. It hits a little more mainstream. Like, you don't have to be into crystals to really appreciate this movement that's happening now. And what it, to me, seems to be about is finding what your unique gift is and then bringing that back to the community so that we can all create this abundance together. I mean, I mentioned earlier that we have 40 Evolver regional groups, and what we're really trying to do is almost create new spaces or a new new architecture, societal architecture, if you will, that's off the shame, blame, original sin grid with the hierarchical culture creating scarcity. And they're more safe spaces where you come in, it's higher vibrational, if you will. People, they want to hear what your gifts are. They want to share them to create, it's called emergent culture, because you all come together with these gifts, but you don't know what's going to emerge out of it, because the sum is always greater than its parts. And what I've seen through these spaces, and I think like a place like Burning Man would be a perfect example of an emergent space, is when you create these spaces, miracles begin to occur. Things you never, ever would have even thought possible. The abundance is so great, and the vibration of what can manifest is much higher. And so I think right now we're stuck as a culture. Like, in our current mindset, like, if you look at the environmental indicators, if you look at the economic, we're fucked, right? In our current state of thinking. But I think through emergent cultures, by creating these new spaces of abundance, we can create miracles, and that's exactly what we need right now on this planet. And personally, I, because as a healer, I think it'd be helpful to have major healing around the planet right now, not just trying to fix it, but trying to heal it on an integrated, holistic level.
Yeah, it's like we need to just drop this idea of original sin and get back to the original grin.
Exactly. And, you know, that's something I found when I was studying all this stuff, is there are certain symbols that go across the planet, and one is the tree of life.
Yeah.
And, of course, the tree of life, if you look at it, our whole bodies look like a tree. The nervous system does, the circulatory system does, and so does the spiritual / energetic system. It's this network, and I believe that's what we're coming back into, is realizing we're all part of the universal tree of life. And as we come back into harmony, see ourselves as branches of the whole, it creates a whole other type of awareness. Rather than separation, it's like a glorious homecoming.
That's a fantastic way of putting it. Why don't you tell our listeners about basically what Evolver is doing on the ground right now and what you guys are doing here in the future and what's going on with that movement?
So right now, currently, we just create space. We have monthly rituals, if you will, called Evolver Spores, where each month the regional communities will explore different topics that we think are critical to our time and that the mainstream may not be covering. This coming month is water, so we'll be talking about water. We're actually doing a network-wide blessing for the Gulf together to synchronize our energies on that. We have a spiritual activism one coming up. We also cover, like, alternative energy, health, all of these things. But the idea is to start creating a rich network. We use the word spore because spores create mycelial networks that allow, like, the richest, verdant, old forests have mycelial networks that allow this life to grow.
Right.
And so we kind of see this as, like, creating this new life. And so what spores on the ground level are doing in a real practical level is they often will just start up permaculture gardens, time banks, so they can get off the debt-based money system. There'll be, like, women's moon ceremonies. There's been healing circles, beach cleanups. They've done some full-on festivals. And this is the first phase. In August, we're all coming together because the spores started 1 year ago. We had one regional group. Now we have 40. So it's like everyone's kind of coming back home. We're going to figure out, like, what the next vision is, the next level of where we can take things.
Right.
A network, international network, so you could go to, like, Chicago, ask the Evolvers there, hey, you know, do I have a place to crash? What's going on? And they'll hook you up.
Right.
And to me, it's a little bit like the Knights Templar used to do in during the Dark Ages. It's like it was just a tough time to travel or do anything. And so they created their own network. They actually created almost like the first American Express. Like you could put money in one place and go to another, and they would take care of you there. And I almost see it like that, you know, like creating little pods across the planet that people can go to and feel safe and taken care of. And that people get some of the values that we're all sharing.
Right. So if somebody listening to this wanted to get involved with Evolver, one of these regional groups, or start their own, meet some like-minded individuals, what would they go about doing?
Yeah, well, first you could go to evolver.net and look at the events, and the Spore will tell you where you can, the upcoming Spore will tell you where you can sign up if you wanted to start your regional group. Or you could also just email Remy, R-E-M-I, at evolver.net, and we just send you an application and a little information about it. And the application's fun. You get to envision what like you started up Evolver London, what Evolver London would look like in 10 years from now. So, yeah, it's pretty simple. And then you just host your monthly event and join us on the great adventure from there. This is about a great alchemy. So I think the 60s, it was a first initiatory process into these things, but you know, you make mistakes your first time around. And I think one of them was, like, this line between, like, the hippies and the squares.
Right.
But to me, everyone is invited to this party. I would love to have Wall Street people start, like, disconnecting from the matrix, if you will, and start bringing their energies and talents into this movement, because we need them.
Right.
Just what reality would you prefer? Like, we've got the better party. Let's go to that one, you know?
Right. Well, so what's coming down the pike for Jonathan Talat Phillips? You got this book coming out?
Well, I'm working on my Electric Jesus book, so hopefully, I'm hoping about a year that'll be out in publication. And just starting my, I almost see what I'd like to do is be a little bit of like a Johnny Appleseed with energy, and it's already starting to happen. When I go to speak at various events, I'll usually do like a Reiki class or a energy medicine class beforehand, because I really like teaching it and having people have an entry point into energy healing, because the thing I find is everyone is an energy healer. We're all energetic beings. It's very natural. People that never thought they could do it, it might seem crazy, but it's actually pretty easy to just channel energy through your channel. You're kind of a vessel for this energy to go through and help heal other people.
Right.
And every class I've taught, there's never been someone that said I can't do it by the end. So maybe that's one of the things I hope to do. I mean, maybe my big dream, Andy, is to help start up schools or youth programs around this stuff, just because I felt like no one taught me how to love myself.
Right.
No one taught me how to be nice to others. No one also taught me how to, you know, strengthen and clean out the auric field, which is great too. But even some of the most basic things of being a conscious being, we weren't taught to be, we were taught to do. So, I don't know, I hope at some point to maybe start up some charter schools or something like that. I mean, who knows, maybe we'll have Evolver Cannabis at some point.
Right.
That would be like the old mystery schools. Maybe that's it. It's like bringing back the old mystery schools where it wasn't just about science and reading. You also went on a journey of consciousness and personal evolution.
Right, it was about knowing thyself, right?
Right.
Well, Jonathan, I've really, really enjoyed speaking with you. Is there anything else you'd like to add? I feel like we've covered a pretty good amount of ground here.
Oh, yeah, I think so too. I mean,
yeah.
Early Christians to American psychopathy to, how maybe we could heal the world.
Yeah,
pretty good to me.
Not a small order.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'll just shout out to people who are going through their own process real quick.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Just stay tough. We need you. If you're going through a shift or some kind of transformation, there's an old line, like, if you find yourself in hell, keep going. You know, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And I just admire everyone that's going on their personal journeys at this pretty intense time in history.
Well, Jonathan, I really, really appreciate all the work you're doing. I love the articles that you're putting up on Reality Sandwich. I will definitely put a link to your blog and Evolver and Reality Sandwich Do you have any kind of a separate page outside of Reality Sandwich, or is that basically your hub?
It's my hub now. I'm actually getting my website up at the moment, which will be hopefully in a week. Talat Healing, T-A-L-A-T healing.com.
Okay. And yeah, when that goes up, send me a link to it and I'll put it on the show too. And I'll be checking that several times a week like I do the other sites that we mentioned. Well, yeah, thanks a ton for taking the time to speak with me. It was a privilege.
Awesome. Thank you, Randy. And just keep up the great work. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Well, you have a fantastic evening. Thanks a lot.
You too. Take care.
It's perfect.
Well, there you have it, listeners. Panopticon Podcast thanks Jonathan Talat Phillips for taking the time out of his schedule to speak with us about all the awesome work that he's doing. And definitely make sure and check out Evolver.net and RealitySandwich.com. And thank you for taking the time to listen to this. And have a great night. Peace.